Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and guess who stopped by in Michigan once again this week?
She says she's having fun, but while she's having fun, Americans are suffering under her policies. When she laughs during a speech, remember that there are American families crying this very day because they cannot afford groceries. When she does these rallies and does these events and does these fake dances, remember that there are parents who lost their children to drugs or violence who will never see their children move again, much less dance again. When she tells you, and this is her new slogan, we're not going back. Remember that for 3.5 years, that is exactly what we've been doing. We've been going back to a place where Americans aren't kings in their own country, but paupers, begging their government for precious scraps of safety, security, and food. We are going back, Kamala Harris, because of you, and we're going to fire you because we want to take this country forward.
Well, that's right. The elitist, tech bro-backed, misogynist, weird Ohioan, J.B. Vance himself. This time it was in Grand Rapids. Yeah, I know his name is J.D., but we call him J.V. because he's junior varsity here on this podcast. And what a bundle of optimism and joy, and what a display of patriotism and belief in the American spirit and the American dream by J.V. there, right? Hey, inflation numbers dropped to their lowest numbers in 4 years, J.V., and costs are still high at the grocery store? Yeah, sure. But that's greedflation, and I'm not really hearing you or your dear leader talking or taking corporations to task for their high prices. And come on, JV, weren't the corporate tax cuts supposed to lower prices? He also talked about the average price for a new car being around $50,000. So I decided to visit a local Jeep dealership's website. And yes, some Jeep Cherokees, for example, are around 50 grand, but some other new makes and models are around the 30K range or 40K range. And you know, how about doing some bargain shopping and getting used cars as well? Or how about this being a perfect lesson for any politician out there to advocate for mass public transit options? This is the Left of Lansing podcast. You can always connect with me on Twitter, the Gram, and Facebook, or you can email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Please, if you like what you're hearing from this show week in and week out, subscribe and give it a 5-star review. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube as well. And coming up here in just a moment, I'm going to speak with Austin Marsman, who's running against MAGA Michigan Republican Matt Hall, who's also the minority leader in the state house, and that seat is vulnerable. Austin is in his 20s and wants to bring a fresh perspective to Lansing, a Gen Z perspective, if you will, and what a breath fresh of air he'd bring by defeating Matt Hall, who's just there to aggrandize himself without helping the people. Austin's coming up here in just a minute. Now, Matt Hall is quite the weird character. He wants to restore right to work for less, basically giving a middle finger to the working class of this state. He wants to restrict the state of Michigan from enacting stronger than federal environmental standards, putting Michiganders at further risk. He wants to destroy public schools, all in the name of his benefactor, Betsy DeVos, who also made some news of her own this week when she said she'd not only vote for Dear Leader again, but she'd love to serve as his education secretary, and this time she'd help enact part of Project 2025 that calls for decimating public schools for her failed private school voucher plan. That is who Matt Hall works for. He voted against free meals in schools. He voted against the working families tax credit. He also voted against sensible gun safety laws, including safe storage, background checks, preventing domestic abusers from temporarily owning or buying a gun, and he also opposed the red flag law. Yet he calls himself pro-life and pro-family. Go figure. Oh, and this is the same Matt Hall who was the subject of a 911 call back a few years ago in which he was accused of domestic assault by his girlfriend. He was never charged over the incident, but he did bust her cell phone. And this is the same Matt Hall who, while a Western Michigan student some 20 years ago, threatened another student with a gun and claimed the South will rise again, which is strange considering Michigan was a union state, but I can't really go into the mind of weird Matt Hall. And this is the same Matt Hall who apparently has a bit of a gambling addiction, spending some $73,000, according to Rolling Stone. And to further give another middle finger to the hardworking people of the state, Matt Hall and other Republicans are saying they want to reverse or once again gut the minimum wage increase and earned paid sick leave laws, which go into effect next year. Now, the Michigan State Supreme Court ruled 4-3 last month that the then MAGA Republican majority in the state legislature back in 2018 acted unconstitutionally when they adopted those two ballot proposals in 2018 and then later, in lame duck, amended or altered the original intent of both the bills, which Ricky Snyder signed into law just before leaving office because he always cared about management, never cared about the workers. The minimum wage was slated to steadily increase up to $12 an hour by 2022 and then go higher by inflation standards. And as for the earned paid sick leave law, it guaranteed that every employer with at least one employee would give paid sick leave to its workers. It was a victory for workers. But Matt Hall and his Republican friends are outraged that the working class won a Supreme Court victory, and they're ready to do battle to change all of it to hurt the worker and to punish the worker. It's always about punishing the worker when it comes to the Republican Party. Hall and his friends claim that restaurant prices will raise some 30% thanks to these working class victories, yet I haven't really seen the evidence. Now, this could help people care for themselves or a loved one while still earning money, and a higher minimum wage, especially for tipped workers, could help stabilize their personal finances, and not to mention help them go out and spend that money at local businesses. I'll be darned. But no. Due to powerful lobbyists, Matt Hall and the Republicans are promising to crush the working class if they get power back. And we can't let that happen. Well, joining me to talk more about the state Supreme Court decision, why it's a victory for working Michiganders, and the Republican threats to water down these popular initiatives again, is our good friend and National Executive Director and founder of Mothering Justice, Danielle Atkinson. Danielle, thanks for being able to speak with us here for a few minutes this week.
Always a pleasure.
Well, Mothering Justice took the then MAGA Republican actions that watered down the earned paid sick leave and higher minimum wage ballot initiatives to court, and the state Supreme Court ruled that the Republican adopt and amend strategy was unconstitutional. So that is a major victory for Mothering Justice and all the hard work that your organization has done, Danielle. But ultimately, it was a major victory for Michigan workers. So can you talk about how this fight all got started and why you had hope that your argument would prevail in court?
Yeah, it's definitely a victory for all of us, for Michigan as a whole. We introduced legislation. We worked with our partners in the legislature to introduce paid sick days. And then when we saw it going nowhere, we decided to have a ballot initiative. We played by the rules. We collected enough signatures. We submitted it. It got approved by the Board of Canvassers. And then it went to the legislature for what is a process that usually is just procedural, but the Republicans decided to play games and to pass the initiatives as they were written and then gut them. Usually legislatures either pass the initiatives or pass on it, and then it goes to the ballot and people can vote for it. But they decided to play games with democracy and the will of the people and gutted both minimum wage and paid sick days. So then, you know, we knew that this was unconstitutional. It was not in the spirit or the letter of the law to adopt initiatives and then amend them within the same legislative period. So our brilliant lawyer, Mark Brewer, decided to sue the state of Michigan. And we've been in the courts for several years, winning at one court, losing at one court, and eventually going to the Michigan Supreme Court. And they ruled in our favor that what the legislature did was unconstitutional and that both initiatives should be returned to the original language that was passed by the legislature. So it is a victory for not only working families and people in Michigan, but for direct democracy and ballot initiatives all over the country.
Now, the Republican majority, and led by Governor Rick Snyder at that time, you know, they had the right to adopt the measures and pass them, as you said, as written, to keep them from getting on the ballot. And, you know, that alone, that move alone, was a cynical move, because keeping earned paid sick leave and the minimum wage increase off the ballot was done in part due to politics, due to the fact that Republicans understood these initiatives would most likely translate maybe to higher Democratic voter turnout in that election, which was predicted to be a blue wave kind of election in 2018. But what they did afterwards, by weakening the original intent of the laws where they crossed the line, can you explain, just maybe with the earned paid sick leave initiative, can you explain how they weakened it from its original writing?
Yeah. And so the law and the ballot initiative language would allow for workers to receive 1 hour of paid leave for every 40 work. And what they did was basically gut that and say the people that already get it can continue to get it. And we, you know, the principles of paid sick days is that it is as universal as possible so that every worker is eligible to get it, that it is fair and really takes in consideration how people live and how people care and how sick we get over the course of a year. And so what they did was basically just say, you know, whatever with all of that, and decided to basically only allow the people that already get paid sick days to get them.
And the original wording too also had like a, was there like a ban on front loading a paid sick leave allowance? Was that also part of it?
The language is really important because it talks about being able to transfer over the year, right? Like, so what if you get sick on day one of January and you weren't able to use the time that you allotted in the previous year? So it just took into consideration all of those things. And what the Republicans did was at behest of the business community, and I wouldn't even say the majority of business community, but a very small group of lobbyists, was to make it really inaccessible to most people.
I was about to ask you that question. When the Republicans weakened the intent of that law, who were they doing that in favor of? I mean, it definitely wasn't the workers, and you brought up some lobbyists. Was there somebody in particular that they were catering to?
I mean, we have a few groups in Lansing that carry the water for a few businesses and then scare the rest of them into thinking that the sky is falling. And so I would name the Restaurant and Lodging Association and the Chamber of Commerce as two players who, for the past several years, I would say 10 years really, have stood in the way of progress. And instead of preparing their businesses for the inevitable changes that are coming because public attitudes and ideas have changed around paid leave, they continue to block legislation that would help, again, everyone in the state of Michigan.
When it comes to the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, this is just something I've talked about here since I started the podcast a few years ago. I feel like that as we as a state are going one way, they continue to go further and further to the right, that organization. I don't know if you have a take on that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think businesses definitely need a friend in Lansing, right? Yeah. They need someone who speaks on their behalf, but also can help them through the changing environment. And like you said, our state is going one way. I would say our state has been, right? This is the home of the labor movement. This is the home of workers' rights. And to have a set of lobbyists that really don't see the values that we hold as Michiganders and continue to try to take us back is not of service to anyone. I remember debating the head of the chamber years ago around minimum wage. And I asked point blank, like, do you support a minimum wage? The Chamber of Commerce does not support there being a floor on how much people should be paid. Right. And they are stuck in an ideological framework and they're frozen in that. It's really a disappointment because we could have spent this last 6 years preparing businesses, making sure they're ready. Could you imagine 6 years of getting ready for paid sick days and an increase in the minimum wage? That would have been amazing. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
Well, what do you say to critics of this court decision? And I've been talking about it already here on this week's episode, like State House Republican Minority Leader Matt Hall, who's demanding that Democrats and his party get to Lansing right now and work together to basically reverse or once again water down these initiatives for a minimum wage increase and earned paid sick leave. And they're doing this by saying that this will destroy small businesses in the state. What do you say to critics like that?
I would say, one, what is your evidence? right? So we look at other states that have implemented one fair wage or paid sick days, and guess what? The sky has not fallen. Their economies are strong. The Democratic Party just picked a VP candidate who passed both increasing the minimum wage and paid sick days. So we know that these are popular. So I would ask, what evidence do you have? And then I would also ask, why do you think you know better than the majority of Michiganders? These are extremely popular initiatives. They pull off the charts with both Democrats and Republicans. And it's popular because people understand the need. Even if you're not making minimum wage, you have someone that you love who is, that might be depending on you for when their wages don't match their bills. Or if you don't get sick, which I had an interesting conversation with Brian Kelly, who said his employees just don't get sick. You care for someone who does get sick and you need the time off to take care of them, be by their side. So I would just really ask, why do you think you know better than the majority of Michiganders?
Are you telling me, Danielle, that there is actually a restaurant still open in Minnesota, despite them passing
Apparently,
similar things? Okay.
you can sit down and there will be a server coming to your table.
All right. And finally, you know, we keep talking about making the state a more welcoming place. There's so much debate going back and forth about how we make this an attractive place for workers, especially younger people. How some argue this won't be a boon for the state's overall economy is beyond me. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I have six kids, and it is my deep desire that they will choose Michigan as their permanent home. But if they can't put themselves through college with a part-time or a full-time job, or they see something more desirable in another state, I can't ask them to stay here when something better or more accessible is somewhere else. And so we have to continue to look at how do we attract and keep our young people in this state, make this home, and then also just be a place where we can care. You know, we have to be an example to the country. Michigan has always led on workers' rights, and we have to continue to innovate and show that it's possible so that the entire country can be a place where people can care for the people they love while also earning a living to pay their bills.
All right. If people would like to learn more about the great work everyone over at Mothering Justice is doing on a daily basis, where can they go?
They can go to motheringjustice.org, but we're old heads. I'm pretty sure they can go to Instagram, would be more accessible and find more information. But we're happy to have people just contact us and join in the fight.
Danielle Atkinson, co-founder of Mothering Justice, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the fight that you put up for working Michiganders each and every day. And thank you so much for taking some time from your busy schedule to talk with us again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat.
Let me also say just a quick word. The Democratic leadership in the state legislature hasn't really said a whole lot since that Supreme Court decision. We also haven't heard much from Governor Whitmer. So please let everyone know that you support what the Supreme Court did and that you want Democrats to ensure that they support the working class, their voting base. And also let this be a reminder how important the state Supreme Court races are as well, which is why you have to vote for Kira Harris-Bolden and Kimberly Thomas on this year's ballot. Austin Marsman is coming up here in just a few moments. You're listening to LOL.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Of course, the presidential race is very important, as you'll hear me talk about in the last call, but so are so many of the down ballot races. We've got some key congressional races here in Michigan that could help turn the U.S. Congress from red to blue. We've got a U.S. Senate race here in Michigan that could help keep the U.S. Senate blue as we are trying to make sure that Alyssa Slotkin defeats Florida Mike Rogers. but of the utmost importance, because politics always happens faster on the local and state side. We've got to make sure that the state legislature remains blue. In fact, we've got to help Democrats increase their numbers so that way they can pass more strong, common sense, progressive legislation here for the next 2 years. I've been spending my time this year talking with some Democrats in red districts who are trying to turn those House seats from red to blue. And one of those bold Democrats running to switch a state House seat from red to blue this November is Austin Marsman. Austin ran unopposed in his primary bid for the 42nd House District, which is currently occupied by the aforementioned Matt Hall, who is the House Republican Minority Leader. The 42nd House District contains parts of Kalamazoo and Allegan counties on the southwest side of the Mitten. And this would be a huge pickup, not just because it would mean that Michigan Democrats increase their numbers in the state house, but it would free the good people of the 42nd district of the mistake that is MAGA Matt Hall and put the district in the good hands of someone who spent his whole adult life, you could say, working on improving the lives of many in that district. So, Austin, thank you so much for spending some time here this week on Left of Lansing. I appreciate it.
Hey, Pat, really happy to be here.
Austin, how long have you lived in the area?
I am born and raised in West Michigan. I've lived in West Michigan my entire life. Grew up on a dead-end gravel road and middle-class family like a lot of folks out here.
If you don't mind me asking, I mean, when did you get the taste for the political arena or the hunger for politics? How did that all evolve for you?
You know, I mentioned being born and raised here in West Michigan. My parents taught us to always find ways to serve our community. Got elected to my local school board at the age of 21. So I'm 24 now, I'll be 25 soon, but feel like I've been doing this for a while. And service is something that's really important to me.
Wow. So 21 years old, you got onto the school board. What made you want to get involved like that and get on the school board?
You know, giving back to my community, right? Like doing the real work of budgets and policy and making an impact, right? Where I can, doing all the good you can. You know, there's that old saying, doing all the good you can. And that truly rings true for me.
That is awesome. And I'm kind of in awe about that because I remember when I was about 21 years old, being on a school board was probably at that time the last thing on my mind. And that is so awesome you got into it. In fact, I'd have to say, I think that's what makes Gen Z sort of awesome. And I'll ask you more about Gen Z here in just a second. But you're running for the 42nd district and we're already discovering right here early on, you're not doing this just on the whim. You've been active in your community, as you said. And one other thing, that you were also part of the broadband action work group. What made you want to work on expanding broadband? Because, you know, I've talked to other Democrats from rural areas, and that's something that they really are valuing and they highlight as one of the reasons why they want to get into government is expanding broadband. So how did you get involved with all that? And, you know, how did that help you become familiar, you know, with the inner workings of government in your neck of the woods?
So like a lot of folks, I remember dial-up internet, right? I remember the unstable internet connection, the noise that the dial-up internet made. I got elected to the school board when COVID was happening and folks were trying to do remote learning with a internet connection that was not reliable, or in some cases non-existent, right? Sitting in parking lots of the local library or just trying to find a solution. Thankfully, there was some federal dollars available through the American Rescue Plan, and we formed a committee at the county level, and I was soon elected chair of it. In that work group, we found ways to work together and bring over 10,000 homes in Allegan County internet. And we're nearing, I believe we just crossed 1,000 homes. So we're still working, but it's truly about working together and delivering for our community. Something that for 40 years, the Republican legislature just hasn't done, to be frank.
That is true. I mean, 1,000 homes. I mean, that's making a difference. That really does make a huge difference for many people. And especially even, like you said, you remember the dial-up. That makes a difference for so many kids, too.
Oh, my parents just sent me a message the other day that they scheduled the appointment for the tech to come out and install internet at their house. So it's really exciting.
Let me ask you, since you were part of the school board, what was your reaction to some of those, you know, weird like Moms for Liberty groups showing up at school boards and fighting to ban history books and books detailing the lives of marginalized Americans? And not just that, did you ever have to encounter such extremism during your time on the board?
It's an interesting question, right? Because there's a lot of noise at the national level. I'm really proud of the real work that we got to do on the board, right? The budgets, the safe schools, the policies passed. If someone had a concern, they brought it to us. Our school district was about 600 kids, K through 12. So they knew who you were, right? They'd stop you in the grocery store and say, hey, you know, this is the issue, the question I have. And we resolved things that way. It didn't get as heated as you saw across the country.
I think it just goes to show with, you know, what you're doing, what you did for your community by running for the local office, like the school board. I mean, that's extremely important because, you know, a school board or a county commission seat, that is the front line of democracy. And it's something I've been really concentrating on this year here on the podcast, talking to some people across the state who are getting more involved in their local politics. And you talk about just the importance of local politics, because it's always the shiny thing is always the national scene, right? But really, it all starts with everything local.
I couldn't agree more. And it's true. I mean, we go to church here. We shop here. We walk down the same streets and visit the same parks. And I think that's truly important. You also should add state legislatures into that last line of defense on the front lines of democracy. We're seeing all these things coming back to the state level. And I think we're going to see the importance of state legislatures continue to be important. And to have a partner at the state legislative level for some of these local units of government will be key.
One of the big reasons why I started this podcast a few years ago was because I wanted to try to at least lend a hand or my voice in helping Michigan Democrats get control of the state legislature. Because I always said, like you just said, the state legislature on the front lines of democracy, but change can happen faster on the state level. While, you know, let's face it, at least on the national level, for most things, that can tend to take a while. Whereas we've seen with Democrats being in control of the state legislature for the first time in 40 years, real things can happen real fast.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, in 23, Michigan Democrats got a lot done. It seemed like every week you were reading a story, whether it was rolling back the retirement tax, investing in public schools, community safety. I mean, there were a lot of things that Michigan Democrats did, but you're right. It can also change on a dime.
I've spent a good portion too this year talking with many rural or dirt road Democrats this year. And it's no secret that Republicans have fared better in the state and across the nation in more rural areas over the last election cycles. But I believe that is starting to change. It's not an overnight change. It never was going to be. But I think it's a steady one that we're seeing some Democrats perform well in rural areas across the state here recently. What are you doing differently to connect with voters, to show them that you are on their side, that Democrats are on their side, and that Republicanism, especially maybe you could say right now, MAGA Republicanism, is falling short and failing them?
We've knocked thousands of doors all across this district, and we started out with a very simple concept, and that's listening and hearing what people had to say. And that was really eye-opening, right? I've gotten a great understanding of where people are at in this district, and they don't like the MAGA extremism. They want someone who's going to show up every day in Lansing and cast the votes and be there for them when they need state resources. They want someone who will show up for them. And that's what we've turned our campaign messaging into, is, hey, I'll show up for you. We might disagree, but at the end of the day, I'm there to represent you in Lansing.
So it's just letting people know that they're being heard. And I say that because that's sort of what you just said is sort of similar to what others have said. Other Democrats are running for state house seats or state Senate seats in the state of Michigan and rural areas. They echo the same thing as what we're doing is just going knocking on doors and telling people, hey, this is who we are. This is what we stand for. And that goes a long way. I mean, you're proving that to be the case.
Yeah, regardless of party, right? I've had a lot of conversations with Republicans who self-identify. They're like, yep, I've voted Republican my entire life, but you came to my door and you heard what I had to say. You talked to me about my flower bed or whatever. And at the end of the day, we have a 20-minute conversation. They really value that.
On the Gander Newsroom site, you wrote an op-ed earlier in the spring explaining your reasonings on why you're running for the state house seat there. And you said that you're part of a generation, I'm quoting here, you're part of a generation that was the first to practice an active shooter drill in your classroom, experience the effects of a changing climate, deal with a lack of access to mental health care, and a broken economy. Look, I know there are many factors playing into the motivation of you running this time, but is that one of the main reasons you feel like that Gen Z doesn't really have much of a voice or a seat at the table, and it's a much needed voice that's needed there at the table?
Absolutely. I vividly remember being in the classroom during those active shooter drills, and now running for office, folks will come up to me and share their stories of how they've been personally impacted by gun violence. Just as one example, right? Our generation has faced a lot of unique challenges. My siblings graduated high school on the tail end of the pandemic, and thinking about that, there's so many things. I'd be the third Gen Z state rep. Rep Martis and Rep Farha are there in Lansing. It's important that our generation has a seat at the table.
And it would kind of benefit Lansing to have more Gen Z representation, considering how the older generations, like my Gen X generations, are the baby boomers and others are debating back and forth on how best to keep and attract younger people like Gen Z, like you, to remain in Michigan. So it would kind of benefit Lansing to have more of that kind of representation, I think.
We all learn from each other. And I'm a firm believer we all do better when we all do better. Like I said in the op-ed, I'm not waiting. I want to build a Michigan where I can raise a family, where my friends can raise a family, where everybody can come to raise a family and be successful.
You know, something that I've been harping on this past year is the need for some major infrastructural change in Michigan, and not just about rebuilding and expanding our roads at a costly amount, which we're doing right now, but also about expanding public transit, as many other cities and countries around the world are doing, Austin. Is that something that you would like to really focus on if you get into Lansing?
Absolutely. I think public transit and things we could do to improve our infrastructure all around. I put a lot of miles on when I'm running for state house, and it's really important that we get that done. I'll add that we just got endorsed by Operating Engineers Local 324, folks that are out there building the infrastructure. They haven't endorsed a Democrat in this race yet. They typically endorse my opponent. So when I say I want to build Michigan and a better Michigan for generations to come, I'm serious about it. And I'll work with anyone to get that done.
Wow, that is big news right there. Is there something in particular when it comes to public mass transit that you are really looking at and maybe that you would like to see expanded in some ways?
Our district in particular, right? We're outside of the city of Kalamazoo and Portage. We're rural Kalamazoo County. So looking at the busing system, right? And how can we get people in to get to their jobs and make sure that they're safe while they're waiting for those buses? We've got Amtrak running through with rail safety. So there's a lot of things that touch my district that I'm focused on. Happy to have broader conversations statewide, but I want to come to the table and talk about rail safety and talk about busing specifically.
Were you pleased with the clean energy and jobs future bills that state Democrats passed last year? And is there more that you would like to see happen, especially maybe in terms of environmental justice matters?
Sure. So I was actually in Lansing when that package was passed at almost 2 a.m. And I was working with the Michigan League of Conservation Voters just last year to see that legislation over the finish line. And while it wasn't perfect, it was really monumental in what it did. I think we just got to put that out there first, is carbon free by, I believe, 2040 and all these other things, just transition office, all of the things. But when we talk about building a healthy future for our kids, that includes clean, safe drinking water. That includes holding corporate polluters accountable for their messes, right? We learned that in kindergarten. You make a mess, you clean it up. So there's more work to do there. And it doesn't happen through fear mongering. It happens through real conversation about how we can make people's lives better.
That's been always my position on that package of bills. Perfect? No. A lot more work to be done, of course. But if you would have told me back in 2020 that a package of bills like that to make the state carbon free, at least a goal by 2040 and so many other things that they were able to pass, if you would have told me back then that something like that could get passed, I would have taken it in a heartbeat. That's kind of where I was on all that. But yeah, much more to go there.
I traveled the state in my role with the League of Conservation Voters, hearing from folks. And once they understood what was in the package and all of the different, they were excited. We held a rally on the Capitol steps with our lawmakers, you know, in solidarity. And you were talking about, oh, you know, if we would have had this back when. Think about where we were in 2016 as a state and the progress we've made. It's just remarkable.
It truly is. You know, sticking with the parts of that bill, since I have you on here and you're trying to turn the district from red to blue, the energy siting portion of that law, where now farmers are able to use their land how they want, if they want to join in some large energy wind projects or solar projects. I was wondering if you were hearing anything on that, because that seemed like that was a little bit contentious, but it seems to me that farmers, a lot of them were really excited about it because Democrats were actually the ones fighting for their property rights in many ways, while Republicans weren't.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, who knew that we would be on the side of folks wanting to use their land for what they want to use it for? For me, I view my job as helping people understand legislation and processes. And that's exactly what this citing legislation that you're referring to did. It clarified the process for how these clean energy projects are cited and zoned, for lack of a better word. It clarified a process. It didn't take away anyone's local control. It was simply clarifying a process. All energy is regulated at the state level, and actually it's giving more input when it comes to the local renewable energy stuff. So the conversations I'm hearing from farmers who are looking at solar, right, as an opportunity to continue their legacy and to provide for their family. And there's a lot of noise out there. And unfortunately, that's all the other side seems to be focused on. They don't seem focused on the actual meat and potatoes of it.
They don't seem like they're really for many solutions either.
No, just the... And that can be drawn to a lot of other topics.
Yes, it can be. Well, maybe one of them is public education. I know that's an important campaign issue for you. I'm sure, Austin, that you've heard or seen the stories where Betsy DeVos has said that she would serve as Trump's education secretary again if he wins the election and asks her. And that this time she'd work extra hard to phase out the Department of Education so that she can find ways to continue her failed voucher programs, which, strange enough, always seem to benefit her people financially. I don't know how that works, but it's just dumb luck for them, I guess. But yeah, and who says government doesn't create jobs? But Austin, this could be disastrous. Let's be serious. Could be disastrous if DeVos gets that kind of power again and continue her attacks on public education. I know that's on a national level, but on a state level, what would you advocate for to help protect and improve public education here in the state?
Yeah, we've got to support our schools. Our public schools are points of pride for our communities. If I didn't have a public education, it opens so many doors for our kids all across our state. So we've got to support our teachers, support our kids and our parents, and make sure that our schools have the resources to thrive. One thing on Betsy DeVos, though, Matt Hall is her favorite politician in Lansing. He receives tens of thousands from her and her family every election cycle. And make no mistake, they are in lockstep with Donald Trump in a MAGA agenda. I'm running because I believe our district needs someone who will stand up for us and our communities, and not someone who tears them apart and is more loyal to Trump than anyone here in the 42nd.
And does that also extend to like the freedom agenda that Democrats are pushing this time, including the freedom for a woman to choose whether or not they want abortion care, or and they can decide when they want to start a family in Austin? I think that is huge because, again, not only a freedom issue, but it's a major economic issue for so many women in the state.
The 42nd is home to a lot of hardworking people who are just, you know, trying to put food on the table, a roof over their heads, and, you know, go to work every day to provide for their families. As Tim Walz says, like, stay out of other people's business, right? I firmly believe that to be true. We need to let people make decisions about how, when, and if to start a family, how to vote. The fact that your vote matters, regardless of if you vote for me or not, is huge. It's a freedom summer. It's a freedom fall. And we got to keep fighting for our fundamental freedoms.
Look, I know that you are, like you just said, a supporter of hardworking Michiganders earning a livable wage. Your opponent in this race, Matt Hall, as you just talked about, is currently saying that he wants to lead the cause to nullify the recent Michigan Supreme Court ruling that Republicans acted unconstitutionally when they severely watered down Michigan's minimum wage increase and earned paid sick leave ballot initiatives from 2018. Just before I talked with you here on this episode, I spoke with Danielle Atkinson of Mothering Justice, who's been a champion for these initiatives, especially the earned paid sick leave initiative. Matt Hall and several other Republicans are going on social media, talking to the press, saying that they will vow to fight against the majority of what Michiganders wanted, which was that they wanted these initiatives passed. And Hall says that by raising the minimum wage, this will increase restaurant prices by 30%, which is strange considering all the price hikes that we've witnessed while the minimum wage, you know, was arbitrarily strangled by Republicans through all these years. But anyway, where do you stand on this whole issue and what would you like to see done?
Well, first they need to get off Twitter and go knock doors and talk to people in their community. But, you know, as a Democrat running for state representative, I respect the work of our servers, our bartenders, and all our tipped workers out there. The ruling really talks about fairness and reflecting that no worker should have to solely rely on tips to make ends meet, right?
Yep.
It's truly fairness. But we got to remember there's significant changes in that ruling. And the idea that the legislature could just adopt and amend something that the voters were saying was what they wanted, it's just ridiculous. So when Matt claims to stand for hardworking Michiganders, he ignores the need for fair wages. His scare tactics about job loss, business closures, and rising prices, it's only fear and misinformation. And I really want to find real solutions on this that both respect the will of the voters and, you know, accelerate our state's economy. Unfortunately, Matt's just missing in action again.
I spoke with one of your Democratic colleagues. She's running for the State House District 57, I think, against Matt Maddox, Sarah May Seward. And she has been working in the service industry for many years. And she celebrated this ruling just because she said, listen, you have to understand that, yeah, are there nights that we make some great tips? Yes. But are there nights that we don't? Yes, there are nights that we do not. And she said this would at least give us a bit more of a stable personal economy and that they'd be getting a pretty decent wage and not have to always rely on the whims of the customer.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in supporting our small businesses, going out to eat at local restaurants and, you know, supporting those folks. And I encourage all your listeners as well to keep supporting small businesses. That's how we build a better Michigan, but also support our neighbors.
I advocate the same thing. Always, always go local if you can. Since we're talking about Matt Hall real quick, I only have a couple moments left with you. Austin, you know, he has certainly made news for all the wrong reasons lately, which I've covered here on the show. He's given me lots, lots of content. Where do you think Hall has fallen short in representing your district, and how will things be different with you at the helm?
He's had a pattern of unacceptable behavior and absent leadership, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. But our campaign's been rooted in the community. Like I said, I'm from West Michigan. I know the challenges we face. I know that the games that Matt's playing are only leaving us farther and farther behind. He's been notably absent, and the unacceptable behavior, the disconnect from the district is truly evident, whether it's the incident with his girlfriend that came to light a while back, or the gambling, or the other things that are out there. People want someone who shows up for them. And that's kind of why I got into the race. I had no idea just how bad it was, the unacceptable behavior, you know, skipping work to warm up the crowd at a Trump rally when they're voting on paramedic licensing and public safety. I was floored.
And for somebody who is not a good gambler, allegedly, maybe somebody like Matt Hall shouldn't be have the power to decide how to spend our money.
You know, he's looking out for himself. He's a MAGA extremist who only cares about himself and not the working families of this district. So it's not a good bet to bet on Matt. I'm really looking for governing and not playing these political games.
I'm going to give you a round of applause there. Well played. Well played there, Austin, with the word play there. Well, listen, if people would like to donate to your campaign to end MAGA extremist Matt Hall's reign and to select some sanity and some good common sense progressive values representing them in Lansing with you, how can they help you out?
Yeah, you can go to austinmarsman.com/join and get involved there. We're out in the community every day knocking doors. A few bucks goes a long way.
All right, Austin Marsman, Democratic House candidate for the 42nd House District. Thanks for all of your help. And I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing your name a lot here at Michigan Politics for a good many years, and that'll help Michigan in the long run. So good luck to you. Thanks for being on, and thank you for everything that you're doing to help out not just your community, but the state of Michigan. And I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Pat.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
What a great representation of what Generation Z Michiganders are all about. Gen Z is about communicating and about getting stuff done. And they're about helping people. not just the people who vote for them or who are most like them. No, they're for helping all people. Austin Marsman would be such a refreshing change and a refreshing voice for not only the people of the 42nd District, but for the entire state of Michigan. And when compared to Matt Hall, who's nothing but an embarrassment to the good people of the 42nd, and who is, like many other MAGA Michigan Republicans, thirsting for power and telling everyone else how to run their lives while he runs this weird life of his own, Austin Marsman, on the other hand, shows us who we all want to be and what we want Michigan to be. I'll provide a link to his campaign site on leftoflansing.com and wherever you listen to this podcast. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. So you're hearing the corporate media cry and complain that Kamala Harris hasn't answered their questions or done a press conference since securing the Democratic nomination to become president of the United States. And you're hearing many on the MAGA side who cried and complained for years how the corporate media were part of the deep state and were also fake news. Okay, now all of a sudden, they're crying and complaining how Harris hasn't done a press conference. Are you serious? Let it be noted, the right wing played this game, calling the corporate press liberal for many, many years, even though most of the press is owned by corporations. Corporations who want MAGA Republicans and Dear Leader Trump in office for ratings boosts, for book deals, for deregulation, for destruction of unions, and for greater corporate tax cuts. It was a good game the right wing played, and it worked for many, many years. But the majority of sane, not weird, Americans are now seeing through the game and seeing it for what it has always been, a marriage between the Republicans and the corporate media. It's all about the elite. Now, MAGA Jabbermouth Ben Shapiro has been doing a lot of crying of late. Well, he's always crying, but he tweeted the following: Kamala Harris and the media must keep this a vibes election, because the minute the public actually redirects to policy, all the joy at a non-Biden, non-Trump politician dissipates. Kamala's policies is every bit as bad as Biden's, and in some cases, far worse. You know, it's actually comical of Shapiro to say something so completely ridiculous, which he does on a daily basis, says it many times. Is Ben saying that Trump is Mr. Policy Wonk? I mean, could have fooled me. Immigrants, bad. Wall, good. Brown people, bad. White people, good. Punishing women, good. Me, smart. Camera, television, man, woman, take horse medicine to cure COVID, give oil man tax subsidies, take money from Egyptian government, Putin good, Pelosi bad. I mean, come on. I played that clip of J.B. Vance in Grand Rapids this week, and he complained. He complained about Kamala's joy? J.B. wants everyone to be angry. I played that clip of him last week in Michigan saying that he's perpetually angry. That's part of the whole right-wing game. You have to always be angry. There's a grievance always against somebody. Ben, your bros are running a vibes election. I hate to tell you that. It's always been a vibes election for Dear Leader, for J.B. Trump, and even when Dear Leader first got back in this thing in 2016. It wasn't about policy. It was a vibes election. And now you want the press. You're begging the press to do a press conference with Kamala Harris. You see, they want everyone being angry and blaming poor and middle-class people while providing massive government handouts to their donors. But it's Shapiro's other point that I want to cover, where he said, once the campaign turns to policy, the joy dissipates. While Harris and Tim Walz have indeed injected a life and energy into the Democratic base and appear, I don't know, normal to most voters, they are talking policy. And it's that kind of policy talk that excites the people. And that's what the corporate media also seem to fail to realize. Just because she's not talking to the media directly to them, rather she's talking to the voters, doesn't mean she hasn't talked policy. While Dear Leader rambles on about sharks and electric batteries and campaign crowd sizes and Hannibal Lecter, Harris Ashley talks about codifying abortion rights across the nation, allowing women the freedom to control their health care choices, union rights, capping rent prices, not holding meetings in exchange for campaign contributions from oil execs, stopping MAGA Republicans from cutting Social Security and Medicare, protecting us from the MAGA theocratic nightmare that is Project 2025, pressing forward with the environmental gains by the Biden administration, even signing the Republican immigration bill into law, a bill that Trump stopped Republicans from passing this year because he feared it would help Biden. You see, it's a freedom-based agenda for the most part. I'm not exactly thrilled with the whole immigration part, but hey, she's showing she can be bipartisan. Still, it's a freedom-based agenda for the most part, and it's the freedom part that drives MAGA crazy. It drives the corporate media crazy. Because, you see, MAGA is working to strip your economic and personal freedoms away. It's such a joke for the press to say that Harris hasn't talked policy. And as for the corporate media's cries for a press conference, after that joke of a so-called press conference held by Dear Leader at his house, you know, the house where he stored all those stolen classified documents, why the hell would Harris agree or at least even rush to agree to hold a press conference with such a clown car of Keystone Cops thinking that they're the next Woodward and Bernstein? I mean, MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell spelled it out perfectly the night of that sham of a conference, saying it's 2016 all over again, and the press has learned nothing from their massive failures in covering that campaign. NPR later reported that Dear Leader told 162 lies that day. But guess what? Doesn't matter. It was long over by then. You want another reason why Harris should shun these clowns for a little while? Try this one out for size. This was a headline from Politico. Inflation is easing. Now, Harris has an even bigger problem with the economy. What? What? I'll read that for you again, okay? I'll read that headline for you again. Inflation is easing. Now, Harris has an even bigger problem with the economy. Okay, right there for me, it cements it. She owes the press nothing. They don't work in good faith. They just get off on making sure there's a close race for their audience and bottom lines. Like Tom Harbin always says, there's rarely any policy discussion in corporate media. It's always about the horse race. And isn't it funny that Harris's style of energy, laughter, joy, and, you know, belief in democracy is causing the corporate press constant conniptions? Strange, isn't it? She doesn't need the old media guard. Media consumption, you see, has drastically changed ever since the Obama days. Harris should bypass old corporate media and engage with podcasters and minority-owned stations, news sites, websites, etc. She'll reach a vast and more diverse audience, and the corporate media in the end will still have to cover it. What are they going to do? Not have news? Her campaign style is winning and is gaining more and more momentum by the day. Campaigns are about winning. And I know it's shocking from some of the national press to see a Democratic ticket fight back and use a good mix of vibes and policy to promote their election brand. So Vice President Harris, you don't need any advice from me whatsoever. You're doing everything right so far, but you don't have to give in to the pressure of the corporate press. And hey, there's always an invitation for you or Coach Walls to sit down and appear on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I mean, your numbers would just go through the roof.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Had a pretty book show this week. Special thanks to Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice for being on to talk about how the earned paid sick leave and higher minimum wage will be great not just for the working class, but for all of Michigan. And special thanks to Austin Marsman, Democratic candidate for the 42nd House District, who is looking to defeat the disastrous and disturbed Michigan MAGA Republican State Representative Matt Hall. And again, remember how important the state Supreme Court races are this year. They're just as important as any other race, so vote to reelect Kira Harris-Bolden. and to elect Kimberly Thomas on the state Supreme Court. Every branch of government matters, as we've been seeing. Let me know of what you think about this week's show by emailing me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.